Welcome to the Lurk Here podcast. My name is Bethany Piles, and I will be one of your co-hosts today. I'm here with my co-host, Jarrell, and we have a lovely guest today, a three-time Olympian out of Chile, doing a lot of stuff in the industry as well. Happy to welcome Simona Castro-Lasso. Simona, thank you for being here today.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today.
You know, it was interesting how we met. We were working on a project together when she was based out of AISTS, which we'll talk about a little bit later, where we were doing a broader meta analysis around the esports industry and looking at essentially what are the key indicators to really start to establish a method of standardization to allow streamlining and unifying the overall esports industry. And Simona was one of the leads on that project and was really exciting. And we had some incredible conversations just going back and forth on, you know, how esports now is emerging into the Olympics. And obviously with her experience being an Olympian and being part of the Olympic movement, we definitely got deep into what we liked, what we didn't like, and maybe some insights for the future. So excited to have her on here, excited to bring her into the fold in the community. So Simona, please, you know, maybe in your own words, you can share with our community who you are and what you do.
Who am I? Man, that's a big, deep question for me. Well, I'm a former gymnast from Chile. I managed to compete and represent my country in three Olympics. And of what I do, it's... I would say I'm someone that wants to give back to sport in every possible area and put all my experiences and learnings from sport and from what I've studied throughout the past couple of years in order to be able to promote sport as well as give opportunities to more athletes in the future.
Nice. That's a great in a nutshell. You said something that was interesting, you know, that you said that sport has taught you a lot. And you're hoping to really elevate sport as a teaching tool. So I'm curious, you know, what has sport taught you? You know, being an Olympian, I'm sure there's a lot of lessons learned, you know, both successes and failures.
Well, oh, man, what sport hasn't taught me, actually? I would say it definitely shapes who you are in a way. It teaches you discipline, it teaches you persistence. So all the values that you can find from, you know, being able to work hard, being able to work as a team, I think the amount of and the spectrum of values that you learn in sport is beyond what you would expect when you start doing your own sport. And in terms of like a personality, especially in my sport, which was artistic gymnastics, it definitely allow me to be myself, allow me to show who I was. And because I don't know if you know about gymnastics, but every gymnast has a different skill. Every gymnast has different qualities. And I think that's the beauty of my sport. I always saw other sports like as, you know, everyone doing the same thing. But I would say gymnastics in particular caught my attention because of that. I was able to do different things and you can see a consistent growth and a consistent like evolution of the movements. And so, and I thought that that's what it really has taught me. I would say it definitely shaped who I was because, you know, I started as a very, I wouldn't say spoiled kid, but like I would get very frustrated easily. And, you know, I was my grandma's favorite at one point. And so it's kind of like, you know, crazy kid running around the house and things like that who actually went to the Olympics. It's a big, big, like, I don't know, progress in the middle. And you see it from, you know, the skills, the coordination that I didn't have, the flexibility. And it really teaches you that whether you're really willing to do something and put in the work. And I think that's what has defined me as a person. And it's been through my sport.
You've been at this a long time, you know, since a kid, and the Olympics themselves and the training involved is also global. So you're traveling a lot. You're, you're getting this cross-cultural exchange, just sort of the nature of it. And I assume even before the Olympics, you were competing internationally or at different cities. What has that cross-cultural piece done to your evolution as a person?
That specific component of sport is what really teaches you how to work in diverse environments, how to really embrace different cultures, embrace diversity. And in one regard, it really teaches you that sometimes there's one thing that everyone has in common. So once you start working in sport, you realize like everyone's there for the same reason. Like there's so many things that could divide you outside the court, but then once you step on the ground, then you realize that we're all there for the same reason. And I think that's the beauty of sport and of the whole Olympic movement in general.
Now I'm curious, you know, obviously you've had tons of experience being an Olympian, but there's obviously that transition that has to happen from being an Olympian to workforce. And we started talking a little bit about that before the podcast, but I'm curious, you know, to hear about your journey going from Olympian to industry.
So it's a lifestyle change in one regard. It's not the same amount of hours. It's not as active as, you know, the life that you have as a competitive athlete. But at the same time, you get to see other things, you know, you get this concept of free time, which you haven't seen before. Actual vacations that where you're like, oh, I can't be not doing anything, you know. And in terms of industry, it's so rewarding in one regard to actually being able to bring your experiences as an athlete into a way that it could help improve the sport. And that's been my goal. And I would say what others have really taught me is that, you know, it's a long transition. It's not just, oh, I retire today and I'm already transitioning once I get a job. It's also about finding new passions, finding new pathways. And I think that's how it has to go about. And it has to really also give you space to rediscover yourself and be aware of other skills that you have gained through sport in and out of sport as well. And so I would say it's a new journey. So many people describe it as having two different lives. Like you finish one and now you have get a new one and so on. And so a lot of people look at it as like, oh, but there were so many other things that I didn't get to do as an athlete. But I would say, and what my parents always taught me is like, you only get so many years to do your sport. Like you want to look back and think about it as like, you took all the chances that you got and you always did your best. And so that's been, you know, this whole journey from being an Olympian to going into the sports industry.
I really love that. Bethany and I obviously have had a lot of experience in coaching in general. And, you know, with Bethany's experience in esports coaching and then mine specifically in coaching educators, we recognize the importance of having a coach and mentor, especially when you're talking about cultivating a growth mindset. Because, you know, I think both of us have seen a lot of folks that really it's that mental roadblock that's really holding them back from succeeding and from really being the best person that they can be. And so I think for you, obviously you probably had many coaches and mentors in your life. What role have they played in your training and how has that affected, you know, just your overall growth and leadership in the space?
Well, I actually haven't had that many coaches in the gym. My main one was my mom. My mom was my lifelong coach.
Best coach. And,
one of the things I learned from my mom was that she always had faith in people that they could do and be a better gymnast, you know. And what she always believed is that everyone had different skills and everyone will have different performances and different ways to show those strengths. And I think that's one of the things I picked up from her and that I always, you know, while I was coaching, I was trying to teach my kids as well, is that, you know, not everyone's going to be the same. Not everyone's going to get the same results, but there's always something that you're good at. And I think that was one of the things, and I'm thankful for her for having so much patience because I don't know how she did it, but man, I was like the little Tasmanian devil, you know, like just running around and jumping. And it's like, for me, watching my videos from when I was a kid to watching myself at the Olympics is just crazy, you know. It really taught me a lesson. It's like I always kept trying, and it was not that it was not good enough. It was just like me trying to achieve my best potential. And I know that gymnastics is very perfectionist, but I was really happy with how I was performing, and I wasn't being perfect, but I was doing the best that I could do. And so, and that I took from her. I had other coaches, especially during college along the way, and it taught me a different mentality for competition. It really reshaped how I was training to compete, and that really helped me out. I think, it's funny because one of the life lessons that I got it from like a volunteer assistant coach. I always remember her, and she told me, it's like, you know, stop making excuses for yourself. Stop being sorry for yourself. And I was like, oh, like that was a big shock to me. And it really resembled. And once you start being like very self-aware of what you're doing and being accountable for what you're doing towards what you want to achieve, it really makes you make that change. Gymnastics, we call it a lot of times, like flipping that switch, you know, from like you could go from a fall and then you have to get on the beam and do it again and like actually do the skill well. And it's, you know, changing that mindset, changing your thoughts, you know, embracing the situation and being aware of what's happening and then making that change. And I think there's a lot of tools that you learn from like high level performance coaches and psychologists, etc. But being able to implement those and actually make them work in your favor, I think that's what actually makes you successful, I think.
And I'm sure chinelas or chanclas from the mom would also help a little bit in motivating you to keep moving forward.
Not that kind of coach, actually. I don't know how she did it, but she was always very patient.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
I would see other crazy coaches, and I was always, you know, lucky. And yeah, I don't know. I would say like she's had it with every kid that she's coached, and she's always had like the biggest faith for other athletes to get to their best level. And this includes kids that you could see that they had motor skill issues or that they have other deficiencies, and there was always a way that she could find it to help them and make it work. And I think that's what I always try to strive for. And that's one of the biggest lessons that I get from my mom.
With your transition from athlete to now industry, and you're doing a lot of teaching, sort of coaching, mentorship now, do you hold a belief that talent is a little bit of a myth, that talent is built or talent is inherent? How do you think through that?
I mean,
as you teach sort of the new generation?
Definitely there's talent out there. It's innate and they're born like that. But it has a little to do with work and grit. I would say like if you don't want it and if you don't work for it, and I've seen this a lot, like sometimes it's not always the most talented athlete that makes it to the top. It's the one that is willing to put in the work and is willing to put in the hours. And I would say a lot of times we have talent in sports, and the issue is like when something becomes harder and for some reason the talent that you've had when you started always made it easy for you, then it's going to be a bit harder to face those challenges. And I think that's when you have to put in the work and you have to have that mentality. And so I wouldn't necessarily say my path was the talented one. But it definitely showed me that, you know, I had to learn from other people. I learned from other people's mistakes. I learned from other people doing their skills. And so it's, you know, just being able to understand what's going on around you, putting what your strengths your strengths are on your plate and deciding how are you going to use those better and how you're going to work from there. So I would definitely say talent does exist because I've seen it. But at the same time, it has to be paired with work.
Let's switch it up a bit. I mean, we've been talking about your experience in sport, and a lot of, you know, what we worked on together was really starting to look at, you know, the esports industry, and especially given that it's starting, you know, to transition into the Olympic movement with, you know, the past Olympic esports series and now the upcoming Olympic esports games, as well as, you know, having esports in something like the Asian Games. I'm curious, you know, we obviously dug through a lot of data, a lot of research, but with everything that you uncovered in that work, I'm curious to hear your perception and perspective on esports in the Olympics.
I would say it's, in terms of like the physicality of it, I think it always should be paired separately in one regard, but at the same time, there's so many benefits off of it. I got to really understand it through the education pathway that you guys showed us. And that really put out a very different perspective for me and what kind of skills, you know, people were acquiring and students were acquiring. And so for me, that was a very, you know, changing my mindset and being more open towards something that I really didn't expect it was that beneficial. So from all of the different perspectives that we looked at it in the ecosystem, it was just realizing that there were a lot of benefits that were not taken into account. There were a lot of stereotypes, and it just made me realize back in the time, like how many stereotypes were around like conventional sports, you know. It was like, oh, athletes are dumb, athletes are not really willing to do anything else rather than just sport. And I think whenever something is making a change or shaking up things a bit for something good, it's, you know, it creates this whole like stigmas or stereotypes around it, because it's hard always to, not always, but sometimes to embrace change and that things are moving in a different direction. And so it's really, I don't know, like, now that I look at it back, like I did so many of those things. Like I played so much when I was younger and I didn't realize I was learning new skills when I was playing. And so I remember one of the things, it's like, oh, we get kids to learn English through playing video games. And I was just like, I have no idea. Like my brother, like spent his whole life playing, just that was a good tool for him to learn English and figure out what the words were and so on. And so it definitely open up a very different door than a lot of people had expected. I think it's something that it has a way to go still, and it needs, I would say, we need more information out there. And I think that's what is still missing, to have more information out there, what the benefits are and what it can bring into, you know, the Olympic movement.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk a little bit more in depth about some of the work that you did? Obviously, it was based out of AISTS. Maybe talk a little bit about what AISTS is and your role within that project.
So AISTS, it's like, this hybrid program between universities here in Switzerland and the International Olympic Committee. So it's basically founded by several universities here in Switzerland and the International Olympic Committee. So what the program does is that it brings professionals from all those different organizations to teach us from the different areas. So it could be management, legal, sustainability. Now, I believe they're implementing esports into it. And so, and it's one of the benefits is that it's a very broad, but at the same time, very specifically driven towards sports and all the areas that sports touches on. And so, and one of the reasons why I came is because in the future, I want to be a professional that understands different areas and it's not just specifically working one area of sport. And some of the work that we did is like We basically broke down this ecosystem. We looked at the different components and the different areas that, that sort of build the ecosystem, but at the same time, trying to kind of like, how would I put it this way? Kind of like reshape the structure, but at the same time, kind of like prove some points that we already knew that were being implemented and that were actually saying like, yes, esports is going in a good direction. The organization was going in a good direction and so on. So I would say it was a very, how would I put it? It was a very broad research in terms of the different areas that we had to touch upon, but in the whole spectrum of it, we realized that there were so many more components that have a say and have an involvement within esports more than even beyond in conventional sports. So, you know, we have the software developers that it's like a whole different environment. We have, you know, the esports programs on one end. And I would say it's a very different approach. I would also compare it to professional sports because you depend on a higher power that is not just the main organizations, driving this, but at the same time, they have to be the ones putting in the information, the money, and the ability to work in those programs.
No, that's really interesting insight. I mean, it's true. Esports does have a bigger stakeholder buy-in process because you have so many different other communities that are involved. But I think esports can learn a lot from traditional sport, and especially given everything we've talked about from, you know, coaching, resilience, growth. I think all of those same ideas are applicable to training esports athletes as well.
Definitely.
What does emotional and mental fitness mean to an Olympian?
So number one is sleep.
Oh, interesting.
So sleep, food habits, and then comes like the training component. So it's not just training, it's training to compete. And I think that's one of the things that you have to rehearse. It's not just because you get this pressure environment, which is, the time where you have to perform. So it's like you have to put yourself in those pressure situations to actually be able to, you know, navigate those easier when the time comes. And so, and relating back to my story, that's one of the really good benefits that I got during collegiate gymnastics. I got the chance to compete so much, and it really, really helped me learn how to compete. But I was competing in and out of the arena. So I was competing in training because there was 15 people on my team. So you can only compete 6 people. So there was already an internal competition. So you already knew that you have to be your A game to be able to even compete and not just perform there, but also to be able to compete for your team. And I would say that's one of the things that a lot of people underestimate. It's not just training, it's training to compete and train the competition setting and train those spaces and imagine yourself being, for example, in a specific arena or even online with all these people watching and, you know, maybe having that pressure on. It's like those are some circumstances that you have to put yourself in to actually learn how to cope with them when the time of competition comes, because a competition has to be practiced as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Jarrell, it made me think of when we were in Korea together, we got to meet with Team Korea Esports, and they were able to help their players rehearse, like you just mentioned, that environment over time before they went to compete. They had a stage with the sound of a crowd, the sound of music playing, and they created an environment very similar to what you're talking about prior to actually going and traveling, so that when their athletes arrived in those situations, it just felt like second nature. They'd already seen it and heard it and understood how to sort of block out some of that. Very interesting.
Yeah, and if you have someone helping you with your mental programs development, you have to have those things into consideration, like what to expect when you get there, what are the reactions that you could have, what are the things that could go wrong that you can help shift or make that change, and so on. So I think it's everything is to be practiced, even like the failures. Even if you fail in practice, like you have to learn how to cope with it. It's like you could practice not falling many times, but then you fall in competition. So are you going to be ready to address that issue and then make a change, or like make every single tenth count? So, and that happens. That happens all the time. Sometimes people, you know, step it up and, you know, do better, or are you just going to let yourself get frustrated and drop it all off? So it's part of the mental training. It's part of like working with people that, you know, understand how you train, but at the same time will tell you, you know, the truth, and they'll let you know what things you can do to do better and how to cope with it better, because competing has a lot of emotional component, and once competition hits, you get your adrenaline rush, so you get like different perceptions of what's happening. Like for us in the physical aspect, you feel like, for example, you have a balance check on the beam and then you're gonna fall off, but then you see it on a video and it was like a teeny tiny balance check and you thought you were gonna fall. And so everything, like your senses get heightened with adrenaline. And so you have to learn to rely on your practice and what you've been doing this entire time, and not rely so much on what's gonna be felt like. You actually practice so much that at a point it becomes like an autopilot and you just keep going.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Like, is there visualization you're doing beforehand, sort of walking through something before you actually step on stage that you practice? Are there any rituals really that help ground you either before or after those times?
Well, this is actually part of like, it might be different from every athlete. But part of the mental training I got during my gymnastics years was that the mental training happens before bed and during practice. So it's like before you get on, you already, you know, try to visualize and feel it through your body, not necessarily doing the skills. And you can also do visualizations before bed, because they say like the memory really saves those and storage them better at night. And it depends. Like it works different from other people. Some other people don't eat anything. Some people count. Some people sing. Some people, you know, breathing is very, very important in performance, like keeping your breath stable and trying to, you know, I would say there's a lot of like training mechanism nowadays. I remember I use a lot of, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but heart math. And it really helped me, you know, keep my breathing and keeping my composure. And there's always, you know, this kind of like Zen state where like things happen and flow. And so it's utilizing all those tools, practicing at home, practicing, like training doesn't really stop once you're finished with your daily training. It's like you still have homework to do. It's like they call it like the invisible training, I would say. So it's like, I would say sleep, eating healthy, resting, recovery, then all the mental training and so on. So it's not just, you know, performing and training daily and conditioning. So it's a whole, as I said, it's a whole lifestyle. So you start, like, but yeah, there's so many ways to cope with it. Like if you're nervous, you can sing. If you're, I don't know, laughing. And so like there's so many ways to cope with emotions and part of the mental training. And it's always also about having the right people by you and, you know, learning those skills and who you approach when you're nervous, or who you can trust, or who has your back, and so on. So it's also part of, you know, being a team. When you're an individual athlete, you still have a team of people that, you know, have your back, whether it's the physio, whether it's your coach, whether it's your family. Like everyone plays a very important role in an athlete's life. So everyone becomes part of that lifestyle and sort of like mini ecosystem around an athlete.
Yeah, I imagine the support is incredibly crucial to even just your mindset going through all of that, pushing your body and your mind to an extreme, sort of have to have people around you that are validating you and pushing you to continue. I'm curious too, outside of just that moment that you're preparing for, what do you do to sort of come back down? I imagine being on stage, there's, you mentioned adrenaline, you've got a crowd, your family is watching, you've got coaches on the sidelines. What do you do personally to sort of bring yourself back to reality after those moments? I saw that you go outside a lot and you tend to be in nature. Is that something that you try to do just to like keep yourself grounded?
I would say yes and no. Like, I'm also a very introverted person, so I like to recharge. Mm-hmm. And I know that those, you know, high tension.
Mm-hmm. The lurkers will love this.
Moments. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you also get those high tension moments where like you need just to cool down and just find ways to channel that. And for some it's like playing music. A lot of like maybe some extroverts like to really get super chatty before competition, etc. And you just like to put your headphones on and then just like block out everything. And it's like if you need to tell people that they don't need to talk to you, then you tell them, but they need to understand how you react and why is it that it will benefit you. And whether it's like in and out, like if you want to take some time off, like it's good to really be very open in communicating with those people that they need to give you your space, they need to give you your time. For me, it was always like if I was stressed and I was like after competition, I would love to go to the beach. I just disconnect and, you know, take that time out. As you said, like I like outdoors. And just finding that time for myself, it was very essential. But it's always also about like getting to know yourself and what works for you. And I think that only can only be determined by time. So,
Well, I think we could keep going for hours on this. I mean, you're bringing in so many deep nuggets of wisdom. Even though we're talking about sport, I feel like a lot of this is just applicable to life in general. You know, because I'm thinking about just how I get ready for the day, just visualizing and getting ready and just trying to do the best that I can do. So a lot of this is helpful and we can definitely dive in. But, you know, you're obviously still on the journey. You're doing so many incredible things. I know there's a few things you can't talk about, but you know, as you're moving forward into this lifestyle change and becoming a professional within the industry, as you look back, are there, I guess, certain things, you know, we've talked about coaching, we've talked about the mental resilience, maybe themes or patterns that are guiding you to the next steps of your journey?
I think that's you open up a Pandora box. I would say it's I take it a year by year. I would say towards the last years of competition, I had to learn it to do it that way, because you get so much more uncertainty. I would say that once you stop competing, you realize that there's so many options and there's so many things that you want to do, that it becomes a bit overwhelming. I would say setting new objectives and making decisions becomes much harder because everything used to be pre-established in your sport, like whether it was events, whether it was places to go, whether it was like levels that you had to reach, everything was always pre-established. So coming up with your own and making those decisions, you realize that it has a higher impact in your life. And so for me, it's been like, okay, we see what opportunities we get this year. And then we make a decision. So it's been basically being more present, being more flexible to what's coming, because you don't know what's coming. There's so much more. For me, it's exciting because at the same time, you know, you get scared because you get so many options, but at the same time, you get options. And that's the thing. It's exciting to see what's out there. It's exciting to see what's going to happen. And if it doesn't work, it's the same thing with sports. Like you get to try again and start over. And so, yeah, that's been the approach for the past couple of years.
Taking it in chunks.
Trust.
Yeah.
We totally feel that esports is also a roller coaster. So we're right there with you.
I have one last question for you before we wrap up. How do you see sport in general evolving in the future? And future could mean short term, maybe then the next 5 to 10 years. from your perspective, what do you hope to see that evolution look like?
I know that it's really, really moving towards relying more on tech. I'm still amazed every time where I see the level that athletes have reached in their capacity. And I'm just amazed every time that it keeps getting better and better. And so, to be honest, I don't know what to expect. I think technology is just pushing those boundaries as well and making it easier, trying to reduce injuries, etc. And so there's always this hand in hand that they have to work with in terms of what technology is making things happen for a sport and so and the other way around. So, but I'm amazed to what the human capacity is and what it can be reaching in the future. And so I'm excited to see maybe new sports coming up or new development areas or new technologies entering the sport. For me, everything is exciting, even from how fans engage and how they can get to know more of their athletes. But I think the one thing I hope we never lose is that human connection. And so, and I think that's what makes sports what it is today. And it's that human connection, being able to interact with each other, being able to engage and get people involved. And I think that's the main reason why I chose to continue working in sport, because it has created so many benefits for so many people. And as I said, it's a long, long community, like bringing so many people from different nations, from different cultures. And once you realize that they all have that in common, I hope that never gets lost.
Well, I appreciate you, Simona, for joining us on our podcast here. It's been incredible to hear about your perspectives and just your overall experience being an Olympian and how you're really making that journey into industry and leveling up the sport from the other side as well. So I want to thank you again. And, you know, Bethany, I don't know if you have any last words to kind of wrap us up.
I think we need a part two of this. I see your vision, and I think a part two of even the technology of all this is so exciting. So can't wait to follow your journey. How can people follow you?
Oh, man. I'm on Instagram. I would say it's called Mona Olympica, like Simona, Mona, and then Olympica in Spanish. And if anyone has a question or any tips I can help with, then happy to assist. So we'll see what the future holds for me.
Thank you so much, Simona. Look forward to your journey. Everyone go and follow.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll wrap it up here. Thanks, Simona.
Thank you.